I want to talk about how women are always expected to do all of the goddamn emotional labor. Okay, so there's the stigma that women expect men to be mind readers, right? And women are so bad at like asking for what they want. And they need to be more direct and blah, blah, blah. And that is bullshit. Because, like, you know, I'm a big fan of being direct. Like, absolutely, people should be direct. I love it. But also, if men put one iota of effort into reading body language, verbal cues, anything, we wouldn't have to be so goddamn direct. Like, women don't need men to be mind readers. We just want you to pay fucking attention. Like, if you put in any effort, you would pick up on these things. You don't have to read our minds. You just have to, like, try. Like, Anyway, that's where I'm at today.
Okay. My thoughts are often too abstract, but like, A, we just don't live in a culture of consent, which is a problem
We
that we need to
don't.
address.
We really
B,
don't. We don't. So here's the thing. We don't live in a culture of consent, and I agree that like if we did live in a culture of consent, people would be more direct all the time, and that would be great. However, even in a culture of consent, there are body cues. Like there's verbal cues. There's like you can someone doesn't have to say something. Like this is the thing when people get all like uppity about like, oh, consent is like ridiculous. You can't get consent every step of the way. Like I can't ask you for every single thing. And like one, yes, you can. You can. You absolutely can stop every step of the way and like ask for every single thing. You definitely can do that. But two, a culture of consent doesn't necessarily mean you need to do that. It just means you're paying attention. Like you can be, when you start kissing someone and things are progressing, if you are paying attention to the other person, you can tell when they are comfortable or not and when they want to keep going or not. And like, particularly when it's the first time, like, yeah, I definitely think you should ask every step of the way. And like, I think it's sexy when a guy is like, can I touch your boobs? Like, yeah, like it's good to get explicit consent. But I also think there are body cues and verbal cues. So like, when I want a guy to touch my boobs, like it's clear. And like, if you pay attention and you put effort into like reading the other person's body language and like, just you, consent is not hard. People make it so hard. They make it out like it's so difficult. It's not. All you have to do is pay attention. But men don't do that. They just don't. Men, all they're thinking about is like, I want to get laid. And like, they just don't pay attention to what the other person wants. And all of the emotional labor is put on women. So instead, women are expected to be super direct. And it's like, if you don't tell me you don't want me to touch your boobs, how am I supposed to know? Because if you paid attention to any of my body language, you would know whether I want that or not. Like, I agree being direct is good, but I also agree that a big part of consent is just paying attention. Especially because somebody can say they want something and not mean it, right?
Yeah.
Like somebody can say, like, yeah, like we can keep going. And that's not necessarily consent. Like if their body language is they are like tense and they're clearly uncomfortable and you can tell by their body language they don't want to keep going, even if they're being direct and give you the words, like you give verbal permission, I don't think that's fucking consent. It is not consent unless you can tell they are into it. Like the words
Enthusiastic.
alone, enthusiastic consent is what we are all about. The words alone are not enough. Like giving someone consent is not enough. It's not fun if consent is all you have. Like if they're just like okay, that's consent, but that sucks. Like, I don't want to have sex with someone who's just like, yeah, you can have sex with me. That's okay. No, that's fucking awful. I don't want to do that. Like, body language, verbal cues, enthusiastic consent, enthusiastic, fully informed consent is the only kind there is. Ugh, I'm fired up today.
I'm Jen.
I'm Liz.
And we're harmless harlots.
What does that mean?
To us, it means being open to having more than one relationship, however you define it, as long as everyone gives fully informed, enthusiastic consent.
It's also an homage to our Polly Bible, The Ethical Slut, which we recommend if you want to learn more.
We are enthusiasts, not experts, in this field, so if you want to learn and explore along with us, we give you our knowing, enthusiastic consent to come along.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, very similar to what you said,
I think that the problem is that saying explicitly no should be more normalized, because I don't think it is. But that I too, think in for order sure. for that to happen, I mean, besides a fundamental restructuring of society, I think the problem with that, which is what you were saying, is that like people say things, but they don't always mean it. And the one of those reasons can be, and this can be, you know, the stereotype is like with men and women, but like it can happen in any gender sex relationship. But like when there's the when there's any sort of even potential threat, like even if it's like you're in, like if you're in a house alone with a person, even if it's someone you know, it's like you could say no and like they could become violent, and it's like, yeah, like what are you gonna do about that? But my second point is, and I don't know, this is very similar to what I said in the last podcast, where it's like, yes, we should hold people accountable, but I'm always looking deeper into like what is the root cause of the problem and how can we prevent this from happening again. This just reminds me of that passage in The Ethical Slut where they talk about gay versus lesbian clubs, and how in lesbian clubs, like typically, like women will, like, you know, like chat each other up and like it's much slower, whereas like men, if they make eye contact, like they're gonna go fuck. And so this is not excusing any behavior, but it's like I don't know, like just like there's just not good.
But here's the thing, you're right about that, but men have an obligation to know that women do not, and not even just women, not all men either, communicate like that. Like,
yeah.
Even if that's, you know, what your nature is.
Yeah.
Like, you have an obligation to not assume that's what everyone else is like. Also, I want to circle back to what you were saying earlier about saying no should be normalized. Yes, absolutely. Saying no should be normalized. But also, I feel like I shouldn't have to say no every time for you to realize I don't want to have sex with you. Like, I feel like there are times where, like, I am giving off signals that, like, if you were paying attention, you would know. And, like, yes, it should be normalized. It should be normalized. But I think you can still rape someone even if they don't say no. I think if you fucking paid attention to what that person was saying with their body, you would know that someone doesn't want to have sex with you before they say no.
I agree. I agree with that 100%. I am just coming from the perspective of somebody who, while I consider myself a good people reader and very perceptive, I am also very absent-minded. And so I think it's just it's just my personal preference. It's my personal preference to normalize the no. I'm not saying that's the most ethical thing. I'm just saying that's a gen thing.
My complaint, though, is that people, maybe I shouldn't even say men, but a lot of times men are so absent-minded during hookups with people. And like, if you have a partner with whom you have established norms and like you know the script and you know that it's a little more established, then you can get into a space where you can be absent-minded sometimes and you're in a routine and like that's fine. But particularly when you are hooking up with someone new who you've never been with someone before, when you are hooking up with someone new who you have never been with before, you cannot be absent-minded. Like, you need to pay fucking attention to what that person is saying with their body, what they are saying with their eyes, what they're saying with their mouths, their words. Like, you need to, even if they don't say no, if they're saying like, oh, I'm tired, or like, you know, just any verbal cue, like they have to pay attention. It's not hard. I can tell when people don't want to fuck me, even if they haven't said it. You just, if you pay attention.
Yeah, what I'm saying is I'm not trying to excuse behavior or say that what those things aren't bad. I'm just curious what the cause is and how we could potentially remedy it. And I do think you are right in that.
I think a lot of the cause is people just don't try. People need to try. People need to put in the effort. They need to put in the work. I get that people are lazy, but you can't. You got to stop. I need everyone to stop being lazy. I need people to put in the effort.
As a behavioral economist and user experience researcher, I am here to tell you that people are very lazy, which is why we need to build constructs that foster the sort of behavior we want. Because I'm a big believer in not the inherent evilness of people, but I don't know. I believe a lot in the influence of environment. I'm not saying what people do isn't shitty and that they shouldn't be held accountable for it and put in prison if they're going to continue to harm people. I'm just looking for the solution.
I know. Well, and I think you are right on an aggregate scale that people are lazy. But I think on the micro scale, which is where my feelings are coming from today,
yes,
I can't tolerate lazy people. Like, you're right, and like the macroeconomic trends are that people are lazy and the policy we should build should be assuming people are going to be lazy, but in my personal life, in the world that I build for myself, I can't tolerate it. Like, I am fucking done with lazy people. Like, I need people who are here to put in the work and who are willing to put effort in. And, like, people are going to fuck up. Like, people are going to fuck up sometimes. Absolutely. Like, I know people who put in the work most of their lives and they still fuck up sometimes. It happens.
Yeah.
But I need you to put in the effort. I can't do this just absent-minded, lazy, carefree, not caring about anything. I can't do it. I need to see the effort. I need to see the work. And it's not as hard as you think it's going to be. Like, people think consent is so hard, and it's not. It's not hard. People think being a good partner is so hard, and it's not. You just have to try. One of my lovers that I've had for a number of years is so funny because he's had a lot of girlfriends, and he tends to do monogamous things, but he's been single for a while. But he will always talk to me about how being a good boyfriend is so easy because other men set the bar so goddamn low. He's like, whenever I date a girl, it's so fucking easy. All I have to do is like listen to her, like give her my attention, like pay attention to what she likes, put an active effort into doing things she likes. And it blows her mind because other men don't do that. Like, it just doesn't occur to them in their own little worlds to care. And he's like, it's not hard to care. All these dudes think it's so hard to be a good partner, and it's not. All you got to do is show up. You just put in minimal amounts of energy. That's all we're asking for. That's all we're asking. Minimal amounts of energy.
Yeah, and I think it is your right to cut out people who are lazy and who don't put in the effort.
It is, but I also would love it if people could change their behavior, you know, like I am not above cutting people out. I will, but I hate doing it. I will, mind you, I fucking will. But like, I would rather people just put in the work when I ask them to.
That's why we need behavioral economics to influence people's behavior, because people are bad. Did you know? Okay, this was a thing. I thought about it, I forgot. But like, I read some statistic, or maybe it was in a class, but anyway, like, the majority of our behavior is automated. Like, you are not as autonomous as you think. Like, you are mostly on autopilot most of the time. And so, like, again, like, people who do shitty things should be kept from doing shitty things again and should be held accountable. But I'm just saying, if we want large systemic change, we got to do large systemic changes. And like, we can be mad, but I don't know. It's just, okay, I don't know. Maybe it's just because I'm non-binary. So I just like, I sit on both sides of the aisle. But it's just like, I mean, yeah, we can yell like, oh, men are terrible, men do bad things, because a lot of people who identify as male do many things. And like, there are trends. And like, yeah, like, it's proven. But it's like, I don't know.
Men as a group fucking suck.
I feel like they do that because of our culture, which we can change, but takes a lot of work and effort. And yeah, I don't know.
It's not that much work and effort. Like, I've said this before, but people think it's going to be so hard. But really, if we all just tried for a minute, it's not that hard. Women have been socialized to do it our entire lives. Just put in a little bit of work, just a little. That's all I'm asking. Just minimal amounts of effort and caring about other human beings and what they want. And just try to be a fucking considerate human being. Just try. And like, if you're not sure what somebody wants, ask. But like, try hard enough that you also, that's the thing too, with the whole putting it on women to say no explicitly. Men should ask. Like, It's so victim blamey to be like, oh, well, she should have said no. You should have asked. If there was any amount of not clear, like if she was not throwing herself on top of you, if there was any ambiguity, you should have asked. Like, don't put it on her that she should have said no. You should have checked in.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think it goes back to when we were talking about catcalling, where it's like, and getting harassed. It's like, I'm not saying it's your fault, but this is the reality of the consequences. And so when you make decisions, like, you should just know the cost-benefit analysis. And it's not fair, and it shouldn't be that way, and we should try to move it that way. But it's like, if you want to do everything you can so as not to be raped, like, yeah, like, I, like, yes, people should ask, but also, like, it should be normalized, and like for your own protection, like I recommend just being as explicit as possible, and it's not your fault and they should ask. And if you feel you have to do that a lot, then you should get a better partner. But like, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. It sucks. I'm not saying it doesn't suck, because it sucks and it's bad and it's bad and it sucks. And it sucks bad.
It sucks and it's bad.
Yeah.
I am in a mood, and sometimes you just need to shout into the void, even though yeah. I know that on the macroeconomic scale, we have to account for lazy people and accept that some people just will never put in the effort, and that sucks, but we have to account for those people, because we can't just fucking kill them all for some reason. I don't know.
Okay.
What was a Marie Kondo? Oh, there was a Marie Kondo thing for a while. It was a spoof on. She's the one who does, like, if it doesn't spark joy, you throw it away. And somebody was like, someday in the future, we're just going to have a line of men shouting to the crowd, does this man spark joy? No! Toss him into the fire. He does not spark joy!
That reminds you, for some reason, of the memes about Duolingo, because Duolingo has like very aggressive notifications to remind you to do your language lesson, and it'll be like, oh, like there's a notification. It's like, oh, you missed your language lesson. You know what happens now, implying that you like lost your streak. But then like people have screenshots on their phone where it's like that notification, and then below it, it's like, alert, there's an active shooter in your area.
You know what happens now. This is on you. It's your fault.
Yeah. No, oh, I mean, I think you are entitled to your feelings of anger, and you should express them and vent them. I don't know. It's just my very personal, specific way I'm wired. My reaction is just like, what a tragic world we live in, and look off gloomily into the distance.
The world. Yeah, I'm just, some days you just gotta revel in the anger and the frustration, and I don't, sometimes it makes a difference, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes anger is productive, sometimes it is not. Yeah. I don't know what will come of this, but I just today am angry. I thought I was going to cry earlier. Like I felt like I was going to cry. And then instead I just got mad, and I've just been mad, and I like it better. Typically when I am coping with things, when I'm having panic attacks, I always cry. Like that's always my response, is to cry. And particularly when I'm very triggered, as obviously if it's not clear in this episode from now, I went through a very triggering event the other day. Usually when I am triggered, my response is to cry, and I almost did. But instead I just got mad, and I like being mad better than I like crying. Typically I just fucking weep when I am triggered, and I am just in a state of like righteous anger. And it's a nicer place to be than crying, I will tell you. I am happier with this coping mechanism than I am with my typical one.
I like crying. I think it's because, as a very anxious person, I hold a lot of tension, and like when I cry, it's just like releases everything, and it's nice.
Yeah, it is.
But I'm sure smashing something when you're angry could also be very therapeutic.
yeah, it can. I haven't smashed anything. Maybe I'll do that later. I don't know. Crying is really nice. It's definitely a release, and there are times when I just like need to cry it out. I don't usually like crying while I'm doing it, but I do always feel better after I cry. And sometimes it's nice to cry, but usually crying is more of like, I hate this right now, but I'll feel better after if I just do this. But I don't feel angry very often. Like, anger is not an emotion. Like, we've talked about how, like, I also don't experience jealousy very often. Mm-hmm. But, like, anger is an even more rare emotion for me. Well, no. Jealousy is probably more rare than anger. But anger is still very rare of an emotion for me to experience.
Yeah. Yeah. When I remember last being, like, really angry, and I also don't just, like, get angry a lot. Well, not the last time. This one website scammed me out of $70, and I was very mad about that. But anyway, when I was more angry was when I was last summer when they announced, I was living at home, and our youngest brother, Joey, is in high school, and they announced that they were going to do the school year, and they weren't going to have, like, wear masks or really do any sort of precautions. I wrote a passionate article.
You wrote an
and
essay.
I sent it to the newspaper, and they published it, and I did not run it past mother or father, even though I mentioned something. I was like, and my dad said he would quit his job. Like, they didn't
did
have precautions.
Did you do it anonymously, or did you, your name was on it?
I don't think I did, because several people were like, oh, I really liked
Jen
your
Bear.
Essay, Jen.
Oh, Jenny Bear.
I know. Listen, okay. He still has his job, okay? He's fine.
Oh,
he's fine. It was
Jenny
fine.
Bear.
But then we also, they had like a school board meeting, and we like telephoned in, and I like, well, we both like had written these long speeches about why they should enforce masks. And I was like shaking
while I
was reading it. So that was the last time I remember being very angry.
Yeah, I remember. So Jennifer and I both went to that, and we wrote separate speeches. And like, mine was very mathematical, calculated. Like, here are the statistics. Y'all are making a big mistake. Like, I'm just saying mathematically, this is a stupid thing to do. You're being dumb. And then you got on, and like, typically of the two of us, I am always the more emotional one. Like, if you were to say Jenny and Lizzie each gave a speech, which one was more emotional? Obviously Lizzie's. Like, I am the most emotional of the two. But when you got on, you were like shaking and like so upset. Like, I had never seen you that upset. You were so mad.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is a role reversal if I ever did see one. Lizzie is the voice of reason, and Jennifer's just gonna rant.
Yeah, well, the opening lines to my essay were like, when I got kicked off of campus this spring, I didn't cry. When I hugged all of my friends goodbye,
God,
I didn't cry. But when I thought about my brother catching COVID or passing it on to my parents, I cried. And I did. I like sobbed for some reason. Like, that just hit me. And I don't know, like I mentioned, like, tragedies get me. Like, when it's like, we could have avoided this, but we didn't, that just like breaks me. And so I was just thinking, I was like, if they just don't make them wear masks and Joey goes to school and then gives it to either of our parents, and like, this was last year, so like, vaccines were not even a thought. I was like, if one of my family member dies because y'all were fucking idiots, then I was like, I just couldn't live with myself.
I would murder everyone. I would murder every one of you for your incompetence.
I was thinking, I had read this thing that was talking about like how people protest in dictatorships and how like they do it in subtle ways. And like, one way was like, oh, they all decided to drive really slowly one day, and one day they like all dumped ping pong balls out on the street.
I love it.
So I was like, I'm just gonna get a bunch of ping pong balls and go dump them in the principal's yard.
Just petty revenge. Just straight petty revenge.
Yeah. The end of the story is that they didn't do very many precautions, but they did allow online class. So Joey just did online school, which is sad in its own way, because he was like one of the few kids who did it. So he like didn't get to see his friends for pretty much a year, and he had to do online school while the rest of his friends didn't. So like, that's sad, but no one in our family died, knock on wood. And we're all vaccinated now.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I think Joey might still need his second shot, but no. He should have gotten it by now.
Joey's young. He's not as high risk. There's a reason he was the last to be vaccinated, because he's going to be fine if he gets it, most likely.
That's when I was righteously angry. I was like, I will take anyone down. Like,
I will come at you. I will. See, for me, and I hate this about myself, I never get mad about things that happen to me. Like, when people are shitty to me, I'm like, yeah, that's fine. But when people are shitty to other people who I care about, that's when I'm like, fuck that shit. I don't remember remember if I ever told you this. So the listeners of the podcast know that I have been assaulted. I actually, the tipping point for taking my abuser to court was that he threatened you.
What?
Yeah, he made a comment about like going after. He was like, "Oh, your sister's really cute. Maybe I'll do that." And that's when I was like, "Fuck no, you are." We are putting, so in the legal documentation I got from him, I explicitly said he's not allowed to contact my family members, and that's because he mentioned you.
Okay.
I don't. It's so shitty, and I'm in therapy for this, and I need to get better about like protecting myself as much as I protect others. But I don't know if I ever would have taken him to court if he hadn't brought you up. But as soon as he brought you into it, and I like imagined him doing the things to me, him doing the things he had done to me, but to you, I was like, oh, fuck no. Like, you are going down. You goddamn bastard. We are going to court immediately. Like, and I should get better about defending myself that way, but I just don't. But when I see injustices being done to other people, that's when I am like, no, fuck that. Like, I feel like women are also socialized that way too, right? That like when we endure things, we're like, oh, it's fine. Like, I'm strong. I can endure it, blah, blah, blah. But then when we see injustices done to others, we're like, hell no. Mama bear coming in. Fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think if it's like a woman thing, if it's like, yeah, it probably is mostly a woman thing. I was trying to think if it was like a Western thing, but no, it's probably just a woman thing. Like devaluing the self.
I think we're very socialized to devalue ourselves and to value the safety of other people.
I don't remember if I told you this, but my therapist one time when I was like, you're very hard on yourself. And I was like, yes. And he was like,
correct.
He was like, a thing you can do, like an exercise is like, well, he was like, if you saw a kid who was lost and crying in a grocery store, like you wouldn't go up to them and be like, you fucking idiot. Like, how'd you lose your mom? You fucking twat. Like, he didn't use those words clearly. But he was like, no, you would like go up and you'd be like, oh, hey, like, no, we can help you. Like, it's fine. And like, it'll be okay. And so it's like, you should treat yourself like a kid lost in a grocery store, which is like, yes, sure, be nice to yourself. But also what it made me think was the same thing with like fault and responsibility. It's like, okay, maybe I can't blame myself for like being shitty, but at this like messing up or not being perfect, because like I struggle with perfectionism. I suffer from perfectionism.
You literally do so much.
it's like okay, so say I'm this little kid in this grocery store and I'm lost and I'm crying, and like, sure, I don't have to be mean to myself, but at the same time, like, nobody's necessarily coming to save me. Like, if I'm lost in the grocery store, I kind of gotta get myself out of there. So it's not even like I'm mad at myself, like it's not a blaming thing, but it's like I have to deal with the consequences of my action, and like I am alone and nobody is going to help me. So like, I have to fucking buck up and get it done. So I don't know. It's a good idea for an exercise. I'm not quite sure if I've figured out that. Maybe I should bring that up. My, I think tomorrow will be my last session because my health insurance for my school runs out and I'm trying to figure out
capitalism.
Yeah. And I'm trying to figure out if I should just get, I was going to call mom today, but I didn't, if I should get health insurance for the state I'm in, which I will only be in for another month, or if I should get it in for our home state where I will be for potentially 3 months.
Well, I think you can get it temporary, like short term for where you're at, and then transition it when you move.
Yeah, probably. But then it's like two processes, and so it's like, why don't I just do one?
Because you don't want to not be uninsured, you don't want to be uninsured. If you are uninsured and you get hurt, it's a bad time in capitalism. It is a lot of fucking money. Like, it's expensive if you're insured, but if you're not insured, it's insane. Like,
I don't want capitalism.
I agree. I want universal healthcare. I want socialism and shit, but here we are living under capitalism.
Well, anyway, but it'll depend on, because it's so, yeah, but it's like, it'll depend on what insurance I get. But until I figure out my insurance, I probably won't be able to see my therapist. And even if I get insurance, if I don't get the right insurance, then I can't keep seeing this therapist. And so then it's like, well, I probably shouldn't get a therapist for like just a month, because like, what can you really do in a month?
I mean, you can start things in a month. I started therapy Well, I did therapy several times in college, but my last time I started therapy in college was like a month before graduation. And I just did it because I needed to. I was like, I need something, because that was when I was taking my abuser to court. And I was like, I realize I can't accomplish very much in a month probably, but like, I need something. Something is better than nothing. That's like, fair. I got to do something. So, right. And it can give you a good starting point, right? Like in a month, you can at least, like the beginning of therapy is a lot of figuring out what the fuck your issues are. So, I mean, if you can get that out of the way, that helps a lot.
Yeah, well, I've been seeing this guy since probably March, maybe? We've been with him for a while. He's nice. I like him. I'm making a note on my phone because it's a funny story. So I may have mentioned this, but a consulting recruiter reached out to me on LinkedIn and was like, hey, you want to interview for a job? And I was like, I like jobs. And so I like called her, and then she set me up for an interview with another guy. And so I did that, and I thought it went okay. I didn't feel like he loved me. And so I was like, I don't really know how I did. And so she emails me later and was like, hey, sorry. Yeah, like we're going with another candidate. And I was like, it's okay. Cause like, I think as I mentioned, like when I talked to him, he was like, yeah, we do like 50, 60 hour weeks. And I was like, I don't know if I vibe with that. Cause it's like still consulting, which is like, I think as I've mentioned, like dumb, like if you're supposed to be so smart, like why are you working so much?
why are you working that many hours?
So I was like, okay, cool, that's done. And then she emailed me back this morning and was like, I am so sorry. I sent you the wrong email. Like, there was a miscommunication and, like, I was not supposed to say that to you. Like, we want to continue with you. Like, if you want, like, you're moving on to the next round of interviews. Like, I'm sorry. And, like, the recruiter lady is so nice. She's so sweet. We had a great conversation. And so I felt bad. I'm like, it is fine, sweetie. Like, you are fine.
Oh,
I,
no.
Like, don't worry. And so she emailed me and I read it in the morning. I was like, ugh, okay, now I gotta deal with this. And then she called me in the afternoon and she's like, I'm sorry to call you, I just wanted to make sure you saw the email. I'm like, yes, it's fine, I'm sorry. So I'm probably gonna email them tomorrow, and like, I don't know, I think I'm gonna phrase the email like, I've liked talking with you guys. I'm not sure the consulting lifestyle is for me because I highly value work-life balance. Mm-hmm. If you think this is something we can remedy, then like maybe we can talk. But until then, I don't think this is like the path I want to take. Because it's like, it is just so dumb. Like, I don't want to do that.
No, yeah, don't work 60. I know so many people who did consulting for the money, because you do make more money.
Well, no, for the hours you do, like,
yeah, that's the thing, is you don't make more money per hour. You make more money in aggregate because you're working more hours. But a lot of people are like, oh, I want to retire by 40, which like, yeah, sure, that'd be cool. But so they do consulting and then they just get so burnt out so fast. Yeah. Like you just, your brain can't do that much. Like it just can't, like you burn out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not, so, I mean, anyway. You can try to work that much, but it won't be productive.
Yeah, so that was just a funny story, and I'm just going to email in the morning and say that. But a note I wanted to go back to, which I made earlier, was, again, this is like a Band-Aid and is not the solution to a problem, but I feel like we need a universal girl code for I'm okay with this guy versus get this guy away from me. Because I went to a party probably freshman year with one of my roommates, one of the sweetest girls in the world, who has also had a couple of shitty past partners. I don't know why this always happens to my friends. Because they're women, obviously.
It's not just your friends. It's all women. Welcome to all of us.
Yeah. But so we were at a party, and I think it was like a glee club party. It was nothing intense. But so there was like this guy who was hanging around her, and like I was just kind of like off dancing because I love dancing. Like, so like obviously I was doing that. And then later, I don't remember the timeline, but she eventually told us and she was like, hey, like, I don't want that guy to talk to me anymore. And so like, I spent the rest of the night, like making sure I was always in between her and the guy that she thought was creepy. Yep. Cause it's similar to the instinct you had where I was like, if he's going to touch her, I will fucking throw down. I will get thrown out of this university. I will take you down with me.
Jail. I don't give a fuck. Yeah. No, I have been at so many parties where like, you know, my friend's been dancing with a guy, and again with body language I can tell looking at my friend that she doesn't want to be with him, and if that man paid any fucking attention to what she was doing with her body, he would know it too. But I see it and I will go over to my friend and be like, hey, are you okay? And they're like, no. And then I will fucking throw hands. I have thrown so many men off of my friends. Like I remember specifically there was this one party I was at in college where the dude was way bigger than me, but he was like grabbing my friend's wrists like really aggressively, and I fucking got in between them and I shoved him and I was like, back the fuck off. And he called me a bitch and I was like, I am a bitch, try me. I dare you. I'm not afraid. He was very drunk. He was way bigger than me. Definitely could have taken me, but he was also very drunk. So I was like, I have soberness on my side. I could probably take him.
I have soberness on my side.
He'll fall down and he'll stay down.
Yeah. But when I was my sophomore year of college, I did this like exchange program through my school. And so like the week before school started, I was like hosting these girls from Taiwan. And for this program, we had like raging parties all the time. And sophomore year, I didn't drink. Junior year, when I came back from Barcelona, was when I went to one of these parties and got blackout drunk and threw up. And that was good. I got taken care of. Everyone was very responsible and nothing bad happened. Something bad could have happened. I acknowledge that. It was a bad decision. Anyway, but sophomore year, I went to this party. And so like, I wasn't drinking. And so like, after the party got disbanded, like, I think we got a noise complaint, so we had to go home. One of the girls was like, with this guy. And so I was like, and so I like went up to her and I was like, hey, like, what are you doing? And she was like, oh, like, I'm just gonna hang out with him. And I was like, okay, like, I don't care what you do, but like, if you want to come home with me now, yes, like, if you want to stay here, fine. And the guy with her was all slimy, like, oh, like, you're such a good host, like, checking in. And I just like looked at him like, you're a piece of shit. I don't give a shit about your opinion. Shut the fuck up. This is
the reason I have to check in is because of you. You goddamn slime ball. I am checking in because of you.
Yeah. So we need a signal that says yes, I'm okay versus no, I'm not okay, just so I know that I can come if you need saving and I will come save you.
Yeah, because that's it's so hard, because like, yeah, especially, you were talking about this earlier, but like, as a woman, like, you're always afraid of like people fucking murdering you. So like, saying no is scary, and like, often you feel like you can't say no because men retaliate when you say no. So like, yeah, we need like a secret female signal of like, hey, do you not want to be here? Because if you don't want to be here, we can tag team, and then we're less likely to get murdered if the two of us.
Oh, I guess this is kind of related. But so my partner and I went on a trip this weekend, and it was good. We just took an Amtrak up a couple hours north, and it was like a beach town, and so we like went on this ferry because she loves boats. And so we went on this ferry and then we like walked around this island and then we took the ferry back and we like went up this signal tower, which is like, they use flags and it's not a lighthouse, a museum thing. So it was a good time. But the like first day, we were walking around trying to find a place to eat. And like, it was so difficult because we kept like finding taverns, and we were like, we just want food, and they were like, we only have alcohol. And it was like, so we went up to this place, and we thought it said something that made it sound like it was Mexican food, but so we walked in and we found it was just a bar, and it was like, there's no food here, so we left. But before we went in, it was a bar, and so there was a bouncer outside, and he was like, can I see ID? And we were like, yeah, sure. So we showed him ID, and then he like looks at me and he was like, I don't remember what he exactly said, but he was like, I respect that you don't shave your legs. And I was like, thank you, man.
Thank you, man. Cat calling me like that. Like, that's the cat calling I want, right? Like, hey, I respect your bodily autonomy. Like,
hell yeah, you do. And it's like, that's the sexiest thing. It was like, okay, like, do you want my number? Like, consent is so sexy, and like, ooh, respect. Ooh.
He respects me as a person.
But anyway, how about it ties in? Yes to the cat calling, but so like, that was great. But like, a very similar experience that happened to me was my sophomore spring of college. I shaved my head because I was just like, really wanted to, and I love cutting off my hair.
You really do.
And I was completely bald, and I fucking loved it. And I don't know, my opinion, I thought I looked pretty good. But anyway, so I was just like walking down this street to my friend's house, and there was this guy, and he was wearing a vest, and so I think he was like moving boxes or something. But like, I walked past him, and he was like, your haircut's dope. And I was like, thank you, man. Thank you.
Bro, Respectful catcalling. Respectful catcalling.
But so the other thing that this ties back to is when we were talking about the thing with like on Tinder, how it was like when you see like straight white men, it's like, you've never felt oppression, so I don't know about you. But yeah. Like, and this is probably, I don't know, like it's two data points, but like both of those guys who gave me those compliments, which are potentially the best compliments I've ever received from a stranger in my life, like those are probably just the top two, but they were both men of color. And so it's like, I don't know, I'm like, but it's like, I'm just going to stand by people who have not like experienced oppression. Like there's just, it's hard to relate because like as a woman, like I've been oppressed. So it's like, if you don't understand that.
We've talked about this before. I think.
Yeah.
I never experienced any sort of oppression, having been handed all of the privilege in your life, having the world built for you, fucks with your brain. It does. It yeah. fucks with the way you think because you're accustomed to everything existing for you. And like the I love this analogy people used to talk about privilege. Okay, so there's a classroom of kids. And a teacher gives them all a ball and then puts a trash can at the front of the room and is like, from your desk, throw the ball into the trash can. And all the kids at the back are like, this isn't fair. Like, look at all these obstacles in front of me. Like, the kids in the front have it way easier. But the kids in the front are not thinking about the kids in the back because they're in the front and all they can see is the bin in front of them. So the kids in the front are like, yeah, this is great. That is privilege. Like, when you are in a position of privilege, you don't see it. Like you can't see it because you don't have all the barriers in front of you. So like when you are raised a straight, white, cisgendered, educated, able-bodied, all of the privileges male, you don't see it. You don't. And like you can sympathize. Like you can, you know, I think if you put in the work, you can like try to understand what it's like, but like you will never know the way that the rest of us know and have lived through those experiences. Like you will never know what that is like. And so you are going to be a fundamentally different person than someone who has lived through that. And that doesn't make you a bad person. Like I fully believe you can be a good person, even if you grew up with all these privileges. I think if you put in the effort, you can become a good person and you can learn to empathize to the extent where you're not a dickhead, but it takes work that you have to put in. And again, I am so goddamn over lazy people who don't put in the time. Cause like, it does take effort. You have to turn the fuck around and look at the kids in the seats behind you and realize they have it harder. And if you never do that, if you never turn around in your chair and look at those people and, you know, realize what it's like for them, you're just going to be a dick your whole life. And I don't fuck with dicks. I mean, I do like actual dicks, but not like, you know what I mean? I like dicks. It's not like dicks, you know.
I guess similar, because this was a note I wanted to talk about, but there was this, I read this meme that just made me confused. And it was like, this the poster was like, sometimes I wake up and I'm like, oh yeah, like being a bisexual, you know, like I wake up and some days I'm like, no, I'm just straight and I'm faking it. And other days I wake up and I'm like, no, I'm gay and I'm just faking it. And they were like, bi erasure is real. And so I was like, is that an example of bi erasure? Because it just seems like, I guess the thing is like it's internalized by erasure. Cause I was like, no one is erasing you if you're just having thoughts. but so I looked up bi erasure and it is bi erasure or bisexual invisibility is a pervasive problem in which the existence or legitimacy of bisexuality, either in general or in regard to an individual, is questioned or denied outright. For example, referring to two married women as a lesbian couple without considering that one of or both women identifies as bi. Mm. So,
but yeah, I guess that makes them not a lesbian couple. Is it still?
Yeah. And so, I don't know. For me, it gets into like, I don't know. It was funny because I was having, I think I had this conversation with my partner and it was funny because she has, like, this is my opinion. I just didn't know that we were so similar, but she was like, sexuality isn't real, like it doesn't matter, like,
yeah,
like we're all just people. And I was like, I agree with you, I just didn't know we agreed on that.
We're just so attracted, it's like, to who we're attracted to.
Yeah, so like I don't want to invalidate people who have been invalidated, but it is just like, you know, like a couple with two people who look female, it's like one of them could identify as male, and like both of them could be pansexual or omnisexual or asexual for all that matters. Mm-hmm. And so it's like we need to, instead of more terms, we need to normalize just saying they are a couple. And
we
it doesn't
also need
matter.
To normalize not needing to know everything about everybody. Like, you don't need to know someone's sexuality, mm-hmm. unless they want you to know it for some reason, or like you're wanting to sleep with them. Like, you don't need to know everybody's sexuality. It doesn't affect you. Like,
yeah. I think it is a product of the patriarchy of just like wanting to control, or like colonialism and patriarchy, I don't know, but like wanting to control people based on race and sex, because mm-hmm. it is baked into society. Because earlier, I was sitting with my partner and they were scrolling through their Facebook feed and they stopped by this picture and was like, oh, like this is a family I know, like blah, blah, blah. And she was like, yeah, they're really progressive. Like their daughter here, she's trans. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, because I thought this individual, I don't know, they, when I saw them, I was like, oh, I wonder if they're trans, because they just like looked potentially like they could be. And she was like, no, like I think they were, you know, assigned male at birth and still identify as male. And I was like, oh, like I was about to like ask more questions, but I was like, I don't need to know, like why do I have this drive to know? Like, they are who they are, they are very, like they're pretty irrelevant to me, like they can identify however they want, and it's like it doesn't matter. But like there is just that like instinct and like this like taught response of like wanting to know.
I think it's also a product of social media, of like now that like we tell everyone everything. The new Bo Burnham special is super intense, but one of the things he says that I super agree with is this part where he's like, maybe everybody doesn't need to have an opinion on literally everything. Like, maybe sometimes it's okay to not have an opinion on a thing. And that resonated with me so hard, because I was like, it is like today everybody has to have thoughts on every single topic. Like, if you don't have a thought on a topic, it's like, oh, what's weird that you don't have thoughts. It's like, you can just not have an opinion. We don't have to do everything. We don't need to do all the things. We can just not do some things. That's fine.
Yeah, I haven't seen the Bo Burnham special yet.
It's very intense. Rick and I watched it together and it was like a ride. We watched it in two sittings. We watched the first hour and then we watched the second half hour. Well, maybe it's 45. I don't know. We watched both parts separately because it was just like a lot, and it was really intense.
Danny wants me to watch it. My partner also wants to watch it. We just haven't gotten around to it. But I guess what you said made me think of something of I was thinking about with like kind of related to privilege, where it's like, I saw a TikTok where it's like a guy was responding to a comment that was like, why do you have a Hindi god poster? Like, is it just for the aesthetic? And he was like, I'm sorry, I didn't know, I took it down. And then like someone stitched and was like, yeah, like this is a good response. And so it brought up the topic again of like how, like, I don't know, like we should strive to be educated about like, you know, people who are oppressed in other cultures and like coming from places of privilege, like we should strive to educate ourselves. But also it's like, I don't know, maybe I'm selfish, but it's like, that's a, like, I don't know, I can't know about every single culture.
Right, that's, you, yeah, you can't know everything. So just be open-minded when people correct you, accept them. One of the things we do at work when we start safe spaces, when you're building a safe space, is you assume good intentions. So like if somebody fucks up, you just say, hey, clearly you didn't know that, I'm going to correct you. And they're like, oh, thank you for correcting me, I did not know that. And then we move on and everyone's fine. None of this like, how dare you not have been informed, you ignorant dick. And on the flip side, how dare you correct me, you asshole.
Yeah.
Like, you smart ass. Like, none of that. We assume good intentions on both sides. When somebody fucks up, you're like, hey, you didn't know this, that's okay, you're human. And when they correct you, you're like, oh, I didn't know that, you did, thank you, I appreciate you. And we move on.
Yeah, I don't know. I try to balance that with like, I don't want people who are oppressed to feel like it's their privilege to educate people all the time, because I feel like that would be tiring too.
Oh,
and so it's like in this society of oppression, we both lose out, because it's like, I, you know, I was not taught a lot of things and now I have to like educate myself on a lot of stuff, whereas they're like, yeah, you weren't educated, so like I have to educate you. So it's like we both lose out. It's just a bad situation. We're working to make it better. Well, some of us are, some of us are not. But, you know, if people are trying, cut them a little slack, but also do your work. Put in your hours.
That's my whole thing. Stop being lazy. Put in the effort.
Yes, but we need structural change.
You're right. I'm on a micro in my life, my personal philosophy.
You have the right to cut out. You have the right to cut out people who don't put in effort, and that will also do its bit to motivate people to be better. We're both right. We're both right. We coexist.
I don't like this language of cut out. I will if I need to, but I also have the right to demand that people be better. Like I'm not cutting people out. I am demanding they improve. If they don't improve, then yes, I have the right to cut them. I mean, I have the right to cut them out now. I absolutely can.
Yes.
But I prefer instead to demand growth and change.
Yes.
And if that doesn't happen, then I cut them out. But I just...
Yes.
Thanks for listening. If you liked this episode, subscribe and leave us a review on your podcast app.
If you really like us, like us, send this episode to a friend, family member, partner, your boss, anyone else in your social circle, the people you want to convert to polyamory, start a conversation.
Feel free to send us any comments or questions over social media.
So thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.